Welcome to Star for the Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I run SAP Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder how to join us. We have talk guests every Thursday night starting 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. And you can either call on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444. Or follow the directions, and the call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the TalkShoe website at www.talkshoe.com and search for call ID 17702. And please use a Chrome browser, because they're buttheads about that. But anyhow, also a reminder, I do have a YouTube live stream that I do as part of the podcast. So if you want to join us there, you can join us there. Currently, not many people actually joined the chat portion. Actually, I haven't seen anyone there yet, but you never know. You could be the first one, and I will be there. I also monitored that just in case there's some participation there. So don't, if you're alone, you're still with me always. And of course, if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall@gmail.com. If you want to reach me via Skype, my Skype ID is FranzGames, FranzGames. And if you want to follow me on the Twitters, I have an account for the podcast called sfuoncall. Shocker! And that's sfuoncall. Also, if you want to follow my personal account, you can do that too. On Twitter, it's twitter.com/PaulFranz. It's PaulFranz. And of course, I have also a third account. What a shock there. And that's for Franz Games. That's to talk about my business. Mainly a focus on client updates, news, and also I retweet when we're going to have the podcast. So you can always see there, including. One thing I always tweet out is a link to the live stream for that week. It's obviously a new one. And if you want to actually find the channel, I've got that on the Facebook page. It's there. And I'll make sure that I get it as part of the info for the SFU On Call Twitter account too, so you can easily find it, the channel there. And of course, this lovely podcast gets turned to Talkcast gets turned to a podcast, available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. Some quick news from A to B this week: new on Wartiles 23 drive-through RPG and War Game Vault this week was Battle Damage Code Red and the FNE IC War Chart Book, which is for you FNE fans. I'm sure you'll want to gobble that up. It's always good to have an electronic version and a hard copy. I'm just saying. That's me. You know, if you don't like that, that's fine. But I always find having a hard copy is preferable to electronic. But electronic is a lot easier to search. That's why you have to have both. Steve Cole worked on Campus Log number 53. Obviously, the blogs. Making sure things keep going on Shapeways and other projects. Mostly, he just tried to catch up on things that he couldn't get done during helping out Leanna during her recent recovery from the surgery, which I've mentioned in past episodes. Steve Patrick was busy working on SAP updates, also working on the Gorn Master Starship book. Gene was managing the Facebook page, the Twitter feed, and of course, keeping the spam assault on the BBS down to a dull roar. Because every once in a while, you get some idiots who want to blast the BBS, usually from Russia. I don't know why. Whatever. Moving onward, when it comes to SW Online tournaments, we still have a Masters tournament 2018. I have not seen any progress for any of them, though mine, I've got a good excuse. My dear, sweet opponent got stuck in Gatwick. Because of the stupid drone attack, which they have already arrested two people on. And by the time he got back, my back was hurting me so much, I couldn't actually sit down for a period of time longer than maybe an hour. So there was no way we were going to get anything done on that game. I will be contacting him, so we will hopefully get together sometime either this week or next week to complete that game. Or at least get going on the game. But there was no progress there. Also, Raft 48, run by Ron Brenmar. No progress. Guys, what is going on? You got to get your butts in gear and get going on that stuff. Move on with it forward. Actually, start for the Warlord. There is an update. That is, I fixed an issue with the Stasis Zone and the Starfleet Warlord aid. It seems like that there was an issue, basically, where in the engine, it said, okay, you only had so much speed. But what was sent to in the aid files was actually the actual speed. Which means that if you did a reverse movement, that first movement was kind of ignored. Well, it was ignored. But if you weren't doing a reverse movement, then their last order was ignored. So, one of those crazy things. But that is fixed so that we can move forward with that. Also, when it comes to library progress, there has been nothing. And part of it is also my fault because I haven't come up with a list for that. Though I have to thank Frank. He did do some updates. So he fixed some of the issues with some of the third gen in the past 2 weeks. I actually was able to update those. And of course, Matt and Jason, all those guys, thank you so much for all the hard work that you've done in the past years. And getting it to where we are now, but I know we need to continue to move forward and get that complete. And with that is the news for this week. The Starfleet Universe On Call, and tonight we have, of course, me, Russ, and Dave are in the chat room, and of course we're always waiting for you to show up so you can join us. Now, tonight, what we're hoping to do is there's a couple topics that I have assigned for tonight. Hopefully, I can get to them. got sidetracked here a little earlier this evening because I've had some issues with Warlord that I was trying to correct, and I'm hoping that won't affect things too greatly. I figured we can do, there's only 23 ships this month. So let me just go through those ships real quick. And I said it's going to be a really quick mini review. That's what we're going to start off with this evening. According to Jean Sexton, she posted said there was released a total of 23 new items on Shapeways. Just a reminder that the grandfather prices for ships released prior to October 22nd of 2018 will end on January 31st of this month. January 31st of this month. The Federation gains a heavy cruiser, both in the regular and the Fed Classic in the smooth body. Klingons got their matching C-8VB heavy carrier and also C-8VK heavy carrier with the Aztec thing on the wings. The Romulans got the KRT fleet tug with the two Klingon pods. Tholians gained a Neo-Tholian heavy destroyer. Also, to get an Empire-specific base. Also, the Gorn's got a heavy battle cruiser, which is always awesome. It's kind of an awesome ship. And the Orions got their slaver freighter, which, to be honest, I think that's of the whole lot of them, I think I like that one the best. Let me just go over to boom, 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 this one. Okay. Now, was that even mentioned? Oh, yeah. I forgot to mention it, but it was listed by Gene, which was, of course, the Romulan base station here, which is I like the base station. This is actually of the lot this month. I think this is probably my favorite, which is the slaver freighter, which if you've ever seen the SSD, this is, the design is perfect. It matches the SSD, and also like the kind of swept wing kind of thing. They're up instead of being down. I think that makes it cool. And then some, I'm not exactly sure what these are, but they definitely give a better feel. I think it would look bad if this was just a flat area. It was almost called this Aztec-ing, but I don't think it's quite Aztec-ing. It was probably where they mount the weapons, for the option mounts. That's probably what those are. They got this one. It's just another Neo-Tholian. Nothing really. To me, it's nothing really that special. The other Neo-Tholians, it pretty much looks similar to the previous Neo-Tholians. It's good, consistent. Of course, here's always the weird thing. Okay, I will bring up this one. But the Romulan KRT fleet tug, which I like the design. It looks good. I'm sure that you realize basically the Klingon KRT, sorry, what the, actually the well the Klingon fleet tug. I forgot what it is right off the top of my head, and I'm sure that currently I have Russ and Dave screaming at me, going, "It's this, Paul. It's this. You know nothing." Okay. Russ is saying that the sound is full and YouTube and talk show is a little flat. That wouldn't surprise me. Okay. So things are not exactly the best recording, but we will move forward. I like the pods underneath the Klingon designed ship. But always the question is, when it comes to Romulan versus the Romulan Klingon ships, the KR ships versus the Klingon ships, there isn't that big of a difference. The only thing I would think that probably got changed was probably right here, which is where the disruptors are supposed to be mounted, or the plasma tubes would be mounted. So that should be a little different. Obviously, you won't notice the difference unless you actually look up close. So if you were in dire straits and you really didn't want to, you bought like two Klingons, you get to say, "Oh, this one's a Romulan, just paint it differently when it comes to the colors," and you'd be good. Let me look at this for a moment. Oh, yeah, the Klingon Omniscale base station. Which to me is kind of weird, because if we look at this, basically it looks like you've got the center hull and then they put three booms attached to the base station. I'm not saying that this would not be what the Klingons would have done. It just looks like someone tried to create a ship out of a base station, But again, as I said, that could be just the way the Klingon said it. This is actually kind of neat. I have to agree. Though, again, I'm sure you all would have to agree that these look like little Tholian PCs that are attached. So it's a little different because it looks like they are these thin slices. It's like a slice of a Tholian PC. But it actually looks kind of cool. I like the triangular shape of the pieces. And of course, you got the Klingons, the C8s. The Romulan is a Romulan. The Gorn is the Gorn, the heavy battle cruiser. Nothing shocking. It's consistent with the rest of the models, Okay, and last but certainly not least, which is the heavy carrier, which actually that looks, I kind of like that, the here you got a little cutout for where the flight decks are. Basically, the flight deck for the Federation is now. The one thing I do not know, because this indicates let me this. Dun, dun, dun. This, I think, okay, yeah, that's what I wanted to do. Yeah, because these look like doors. So I don't know if the Federation has those are actually shuttle doors, so they could actually launch a whole squadron at one time. Could that be, you know, six on this side, six on the other side? You got a whole squadron. You got a squadron of 12. I want to win the lottery and build my own custom sailing ship and sail the world in a Klingon tug. That's kind of neat. I'm hoping that people I'm hoping the stream survives, because according to Dave, the stream is offline, and well, not much I can do about it at this moment in time. Hopefully, yeah. Okay, we'll go back to here. I think that is pretty much it for the miniatures for this month. I just wanted to do a quick run through of what was new. Some quick comments about it, because of I'm not sure how. I've not got any response back, though. Obviously, the patient zero said, "Oh, this guy is really boring," because he doesn't want to see that. He wants to see more action. He wants to see actually live SFB game being played is what he wants. But that's not what this channel is for. This channel is for showing the stream of the podcast. That's all it's meant to do. So. Anything else would be a distraction from it. Now, obviously, I still want to do the recordings of the YouTube. And actually, I've got one for my game, which I still haven't yet to finish playing because of the Gatwick situation and also my back, which I hurt last week. I'm better now. That's the reason why we're even having the podcast. So, okay, with that, I'm going to stop and then I'm going to switch it over to the chat room. Okay. Thanks. Thanks, Russ, for making sure that they verified that I still have audio and video. Hopefully, you're getting a good enough recording. If not, I might have to start thinking about using the OBS studio, which is kind of cool. That's one thing that was weird. I've sort of mentioned on Floss Weekly. I was listening to it this past week, actually yesterday, and it was to mention, with the OpenCast, they can stream videos. But you say, oh, there's no real good open source solution. But I could have sworn that OBS, OBS Studio. But anyway, that actually does stream and it records, and it does actually a pretty good job. It doesn't do a good job of management. It does good effects and that kind of thing. But and so, it definitely will stream to Twitch. OBS Studio. Thanks, Russ. It's OBS Studio. But anyway, yes, I looked at it, and it looks like I can actually stream to YouTube. I'm not exactly sure how you would do that. I mean, if there's anything special you have to do with YouTube to have it so it's actually verified when it comes to the username and password and all that kind of thing, to make sure that the app can actually use it, can connect up to it. I'm assuming that it's using the YouTube, the Google APIs that they have for YouTube, because I know the YouTube there's YouTube APIs. I currently actually don't know what YouTube APIs are available. I was looking at that earlier, like a couple of years, quite a few years ago, because I was thinking about trying to create a an audio player, basically, of YouTube, because of we had the whole issue with YouTube being used for people listening to music, which was weird, but it worked. Okay, so well, that's it for the mini review for this week. So one thing I wanted to actually discuss actually was something that I just read. I might have discussed it before. I don't remember if I did or not. It's been a while, and definitely the post that Gary Carney did is over 2 years old. It's from August of 2016. And he was mentioning there was a bit of discussion recently about in this 2016, but talk show recordings regarding the Carnivans and the Sargasso storm zone. Actually, I read this post. I might have read before. I might have talked about it before, but at this moment in time, I don't remember. So I'm gonna discuss this because I think this post is kind of interesting. In that, Garrick talks about on the Sargasso octant. And when it comes to the Sargasso octant, that, and he was just mentioning how the Carnivans, he said the Carnivans may offer a useful entry point for potential Sargasso project. And the whole idea here is that they also allow for, let me finish reading this. They may also allow for a more limited approach to be taken. In theory, one would not need to fill in all of the blanks in terms of providing a full hex map for the entire octant, at least not right away. Rather, one could start by showing the Carnivans' own enclave, the storm hexes surrounding it, and the first cluster of, say, 3 to 4 neighboring enclaves of for the first, say, 50 to 60 years or so. Even the Carnivans themselves may be too busy to fend off their near neighbors to gain any sort of reliable data on the rest of the octant. So, actually, when it comes to doing hex map, perhaps one option could be to do 3 rather than 2 tiers of hexes. Tier 1 would be the permanent hexes. Tier 2 would be hexes that would randomly ebb and flow in terms of whether or not they would be consumed by the storms in a given season. And their tier 3 would be always part of the storm region. I kind of like, though. One thing Terry O'Carroll pointed out, which was when storm died down, so they didn't think the entire hex would be storm free. Probably just around the star systems is safe for travel, but no interstellar travel, just interplanetary travel would be. So, okay. So, yeah. I would like to see it too, because I think fleshing out the Sargasso would be a great thing. I'm gonna get back to his post. And it's mentioned how the Andromedans might have been able to take over a single enclave, basically close to the galactic rim, but they might find themselves trapped when the storms hit. Because they might have made it into one of the enclaves, but then a storm hits, and all of a sudden they're cut off from RTN links. Now, the only question I have about RTN, which is how distant do they have the RTN bases have to be, or how close do they have to be, but more to the point, how close do they have to be to make it viable? So meaning that if the enclaves are close enough so you can have an RTN node on the network in each enclave. Yes, you probably could not travel from enclave to enclave while the storms were going on, but you could actually, use the RTN when the storms were settled down. Now, again, as I said, I don't know how close the nodes have to be. In theory, you can say, well, the Andromedans, we find, basically it would find the RTN network completely disrupted by the storm, and any bases outside the safe zones would find themselves destroyed because of the storm would just wreck the ships or wreck the bases that they had set up. Gary was pointing out that they might have a local beachhead would be more or less obligated to make do with, say, constructing a battle station or two, and plan to perhaps target one new enclave at a time between each storm session. And I would agree with that. It's possible also that the Andromedans went, this is not worth the trouble. And the thing is, and I can understand that because of the way that the Andromeda technology works, in that small number of ships, but they were highly, highly mobile. And that's why they could flip it from here to there and here to there, and they would be completely fine. And they would look like they were a much larger fleet because of the RTN network. That's what really allowed them to do that. But he's also pointing out this would mean that if the Caravans were to settle into an enclave closer to the rimward edge of the storm zone, by which I mean the zone which encircled the radiation zone on the Milky Way, they might actually see it in Andromedan ships for quite some time, if ever. Which also might make it interesting depending on whether any survey ships from the Alpha Octant or the Zircalian Tyranny were to show up at some point, which is always the question for us when it comes to Sargasso, Octant. It's because of that is basically where the Zircalians live. And one thing we don't know about, we do not know that much about the Zircalians, in that, like, when it comes to them, that we don't know that much about it. We don't know. I'm assuming the Zircalians cannot have no way of traveling in the Sargasso storm zone, while the storm is active, like everybody else. But of course, they might have some special technology to actually jump from enclave to enclave. For all we know, they were able to form like wormholes kind of things, which they would set up these wormhole gates on each enclave that they had control over, so they could actually travel between those enclaves while the storms were still active. We don't know. We have to. I've said something that's ADB has to define in that case. So I think the Sargasso storm zone is interesting, and I like Gary's idea of basically. Even I feel like one thing that Gary is pointing out is that one thing you could do instead of defining the Zircalians and all that involves, even though I think a lot of people are quite excited about the Zircalians. And of course, with the Zircalians, the whole idea of the second generation next ships. In theory, what I think Gary is pointing out is that you could actually develop the different enclaves. That would be interesting. The Rin conquered the Sargasso. Oh, understood, David. You want the Zarkalians too. I think, as I said, most people do want the Zarkalians because I think it'd be interesting. The tough part about the Zarkalians, I think, is that here is the difficulty about the Zarkalians and the Sargasso and all that kind of thing, and making sure it's all consistent. And that is, we want the Zarkalians, but also the thing is with the Zarkalians, when the second generation X ships are developed, they have to be this middle ground. They have to be able to fight the Zarkalians, but also they have to be kind of compatible with the general warships, because I know that's one thing that ADV said they wanted to do, which was have some way of having the second generation X ships be able to be used with the general warships. So that, you know, whether it would require some adjustments, or I'm not sure adjustments is correct. Well, when you have the combined ships, the big question obviously is how do we do the second generation X ships? And then from there, we could actually create the Zarkalians at that point in my mind, because of then you can actually have something that balances off that second generation X ships. And then of course you have the enclaves, which my assumption at this point would be that the individual empire, quote unquote, empires, races, whatever, that are in those enclaves in the Sargasso storm zone, that they're weaker when it comes, you know, that the a lot of them, or most of them, are part of the Zarkalian tyranny. And I would think that the Zarkalians would allow them to have weaker ships, but be able to protect themselves from, you know. Rest of this mentioned that the rumor has it that the Space Bunnies moved into New Jersey Hayes Nebula and found radiation levels intolerable. I like that. But so I think that would actually work out quite well. So, okay, moving on to the next topic. The next topic I wanted to discuss actually was past and future. At the moment, I don't think ADV has actually pointed out what their plans are for this upcoming year yet. So I unfortunately won't be able to talk about the future because I checked and I didn't see anything that ADB has put on the schedule, not put on a tentative schedule, because invariably I know ADB likes to put out a tentative schedule. This is what we'd like to do for the upcoming year. Obviously, this past year was a nightmare when it comes to real life issues with Steve and Leanna, Gene Sexton. The only person that seemed to stay relatively healthy was Steve Petrick. No, I don't, Dave, I don't say that there's no future for SFP. There's no future. ADB hasn't outlined any future products for SFP at this point in time. I'm sure that they have a plan, they might not have a plan today, but I'm sure they will create a plan for this upcoming year, what they want to accomplish. I know that they're still working on one thing that they definitely planned on doing this year. I can put money. You can put money on this one, which is they're gonna publish the Gorn Master Starship book, because they've been working on that Master Starship book for the past 3 months or longer, and part of that basically has part of the delay has been due to Steve Cole, you know, basically being out of commission for the most part, whether it is his health or Leanna's health. Now, it makes it a little difficult to get things done. And Dave, I agree. I would like to see Russ get published. I think that would be awesome. And I can't wait to see what Russ sends me when it comes to the videos. And I have to figure out how I'm going to integrate that. And for everyone out there, we will look forward to that. And so, of course, in this past year, we had multiple Master Starship books come into pop into being. Okay, right. We had the Zinti Master Starship book was released. This year, actually, overall, there weren't that many products per se, because I think we all will agree that this year was the year of the minis. ADB's has been releasing anywhere from 20 to 50 miniatures, different miniatures each month. Obviously, they couldn't keep up, you know, doing a 50 a month, which is just, it's insane. But they've caught up quite nicely for a lot of, to cover most of the pieces, you know, that are needed. Obviously, the one great thing that happened with with Shapeways and all the minis that were released this year was, of course, the Omega Sector. Getting all those different Omega Sector empires added. And so now previously, something that I could never have been done before, which is the Omega, having minis for the Omega Sector are now a reality. And that's because the whole idea of print, 3D print on demand, miniatures printed on demand. And I know that we have talked about one thing which we would like to see done, which is basically minis for like Prime Directive, you know, for actual character pieces, you know, a Gorn or a human or a. Here's always the tough part. In my mind, there aren't that many races that could be actually shown. Obviously, there are certain races that we know exist. One thing I was just thinking about is the Klingon Empire. There, if I recall correctly, from one of the front covers of the Captain's Log, was there is a kind of ape-like race that is one of the Klingon races. That's a race that's part of the Klingon Empire. You know, obviously they're not, you know, not like the Klingons themselves are running things, but they are Marines. So you can have that one. The whole part about humans versus Romulans versus Vulcans versus Romulans, Vulcans, Klingons. For the most part, the miniatures are going to be pretty much the same. The only question could be is ears when it comes to the Romulans and the Vulcans. Thanks, David. Just mentioning that the Klingons GURPS covered all of the subject races of the Klingons, which means I probably should pick up a copy. Because I really like to know about the different races that are part of the Klingon Empire, that's the one thing which always brings up another question, which is how many of the races do you actually show when it comes to the subject races too, for most people, if you think of the Federation. you don't see any, you don't think of any of the member races of the Federation. You think of the humans or the Vulcans, because that's what we knew from the Star Trek series, you know. And of course, it's got some other ones, the Orion slave girls and other ones, which are basically they're humanoids. They're not that distant from being humans versus like the Lyrans or the Zintis, which are basically cat, you know, cat humanoid creatures, you know, and that could be done. Now, I've said the only way you can tell the difference between a Lyran and a Zinti would be probably, you know, if someone decided to paint like a tunic that they were wearing so that you can actually identify the difference between the two. And I read back in the day about that if you actually mentioned to the Lyran and the Zinni that they probably came from the same base humanoid, you know, cat humanoid race, you have a pretty big argument from that. It's like, oh, we're so much different than that, you know. But you know, I think every one of us would agree that they're pretty much the same, just different perspectives on the universe, different sides of the same coin, kind of thing. But you know, having the Gorns easy enough to do the lizard creatures. The question would be, in my mind, when it comes to the lizard creatures, how would you show them? Would you show them like lizard men? You know, or would you show them more along the lines of the traditional Star Trek Gorn? You know, which is humanoid, doesn't have a tail, has, you know, this big head, you know, that kind of thing, that kind of a thing. And of course, when it comes to the Gorns, they had their different I'm not sure if the coloration of the Gorns actually were different based on which kind of Gorn you were, whether you were Gorn gold or silver or green Gorn. I forget. But I know there are different Gorns. But I remember that, you know, the classic Gorns when it comes to Star Trek didn't have a tail. They weren't lizard men. Where the whole idea of, you know, lizard men is, you know, it's more along the lines of Spider-Man. And I forget that the lizard creature that scientists turned into. Oh, gray, brown, and green. Okay. Thanks, Ross. When it comes to the Gorns. But, you know, the question would be, okay, how would they be represented? Would they be more quote-unquote modern with have a tail and all that kind of thing? And I personally would hope to avoid something like that. Maybe something more like, you know, possibly looks like ones with a tail but without the tail. You know? So I think that'd be kind of interesting to see. I know, obviously, the one thing that ADB will be putting out this year will be capsule number 53. At least I hope they do. Because if not, we're in trouble. I'm just trying to look up here and boom. And see if I list out when it was created. No, oh, there it is. So Capsule 52 has been on the site since March of 2017. So it's been over a year and a half, coming up on 2 years. Obviously, the production of Cabin Slugs has slowed down greatly since the beginning, where we actually had it twice a year, then now once a year, and now it looks like once every 2 years. I'm hoping that Cabin Slugs number 53 gets out the door this year. If it doesn't, I think we're in real trouble. Because if nothing else, a Cabin Slug is a product that ADB can produce and put out there that people will buy, and doesn't require a lot of design requirements. Obviously, the biggest thing there when it comes to the Cabin Slug is going to be the stories and articles and that kind of thing. And I'll be writing up another article, which, given 2 years, there's been a lot of things that have happened in 2 years when it comes to the Starfleet Warlord, the type of SFB Online that's happened with things all around the online community. So I'm not sure where we are in the Call to Arms Starfleet book 2.0. Because I know that was one thing that they were working on. It's been a while. Let me just see if I can. Okay. Wow. Okay, book 2. Last update for that was the last update on book 2 was actually November of this past year, so that's not bad. Yeah, last I heard, currently the book 2 was originally planned for June, but since they still haven't got out. Yeah, Steve Cole was mentioning a post in August, was working on the final draft when he got sick, so he couldn't work at all on it. Yeah, it should be interesting to see how book 2 comes out, because hopefully it will come out this year. And let me see what they have scheduled for book 3. Book 3. Okay. Yeah, Steve Cole's. Now, this is back in 2015 when he laid out what's going to be in book 3, which obviously it could change. I said, book 3, we are not opening discussions on this project until book 2 is finished, but we need to make sure that we have a plan and don't paint ourselves into a corner. And obviously, that thread is currently not open because they're not talking about it. So it should be interesting to see how many books they can get through. Hopefully, they can get through book 2, release that. Release Cabin Slug number 53 this year. What I would really love is an updated GURPS Prime Directive that I know Jean's been working on and off on. I think that'd be fantastic if she could get that done. That's two new products and one update product. The kind of magazine for ADB, and I think that would be good. Obviously, they want to keep the miniatures train going. My understanding is that they're not making that much money off of miniatures because of Shapeways takes a cut. Obviously they make it and then they take a little bit of the profit in addition, for how much it costs them, because obviously they have to make a profit. ADB gets a cut, but before ADB gets a cut, the sculptors get their cut, which is a little bit. And it's not, might be, I think Steve Cole said it's probably enough to go out for a nice dinner. So it's not a whole lot of money. You can't live off the earnings off being a sculptor for the miniatures. Um, Oh, jeez. Next week's topic, Peruvian doomsday revenge weapon. Honey, I shrunk the Gorn's torpedo. The Gorn's tiny with Cockney accent, always trying to sell insurance. That's a good one, Russ. That's a good one. I like that. Well, I think with that, we're just going to wrap it up for this evening. I've had a wonderful time discussing about the Sargasso, you know, and I know it's an old in theory, it's like an old topic. Of course, I'm not sure if I remember actually discussing it before, at least that much. But I've really enjoyed the post that I read from Gary. And then there, of course, was the quick review of minis, and I tried to make it as quick as possible so people aren't bored. And then, of course, finally, discuss about some of the things that have been pushed out this past year. As I said, most of those are the miniatures, and some things that we look forward to seeing in the upcoming year. I know ADB has not put up their schedule. I'm not sure where their health is when it comes to both Steve and Leanna, because I'm pretty sure Steve's supposed to have surgery either late January or February. I forget which. But hopefully that he will come through that quickly and recover quickly so that we can continue on, you know, brave new world of new ADB products coming out the door. And with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.